Chapter 72. Central Europe. In the disaster of defeat, it was not surprising that the Austrians should identify with their German compatriots. Austria and Germany shared a common language, culture, and history, and now a common agony. Austrians felt that in union with Germany, a revival could still be possible. The Anschluss was born in 1918 out of tragedy and persecution long before the Allies had ever heard the name Hitler. As early as November 12, 1918, the day after the armistice, the Austrian Parliament, with a socialist majority, voted for the unification of Austria with Germany. It was a rare issue, one all the political parties agreed on. On January 9, 1919, Austrian Chancellor Karl Renner repeated for the benefit of the Paris Peace Conference, "The Republic of Austria is part of the Greater German Reich." Anschluss had become the main platform of the Austrian Socialist Party, and on this issue alone it was swept to power in 1919. Chancellor Renner never changed this policy even when his political opponent, Adolf Hitler, made his entry in Vienna in 1938. He still called on all Austrians to support unification regardless of political affiliation. Socialists and Catholics alike voted 99% in favor of Anschluss in 1938, as they had in 1919. They were all Germans who wanted to live, or rather survive, within Germany. 40% of the workers of the Austrian Empire were in 1919 concentrated in Vienna and its environs, out of work after Austria had been stripped of its industries and mines. This explosive situation would lead to civil war under Engelbert Dollfuss and to Anschluss in 1938. The concept of Austro-German unity was looked upon with favor by a number of sensible Europeans. The Union could not provide any kind of military threat to the Allies. The combined armed forces allowed for both countries by the Versailles Treaty amounted to 135,000 men, less than half the Polish army. In 1919, the French government commanded armed forces of 4 million soldiers, 30 times more than Austria and Germany. The British Empire had absolute control of the seas, while Germany was deprived of its entire navy, without so much as a single submarine or minesweeper. Austria had been truncated. Germany was surrounded by hostile neighbors. The American government had no objections to the Austrians exercising their right to self-determination. After all, it would be a rare application of Wilson's 14 points. Here again, however, the Czechs, Serbians, Romanians, Italians and French were determined to thwart the popular will of Austrians and Germans alike. Tardieu feared that the addition of 6 million Austrian Catholics to Germany would weaken the Masonic forces in that country, while Beneš and Paschik were not about to let the Austrians influence a German revival. All had much to fear for their ill-gotten gains. Article 80 of the Versailles Treaty and Article 88 of the Treaty of Saint-Germain 3 months later officially negated the right of Austrians to decide their own future and their own affairs. Although Anschluss with Germany was their overwhelming desire, the treaties invoked Austrian independence to deny independence to the Austrians. The independence of Austria is inalienable without the consent of the League of Nations. In consequence, Austria undertakes to abstain from any action likely to compromise its independence. Since France had veto power at the League of Nations, it thus had a veto to prevent German-Austrian unification. French historian Rain did not miss the hypocrisy of the articles. It came down to saying that Austria was independent in spite of itself. The Europe of Versailles, page 115. There was one glaring exception in the routine destruction of European countries perpetrated by the Versailles treaty makers, the Jews. They benefited from the protection of the Jewish delegates, who were represented in most of the national delegations attending the peace conference. Manly Hudson, the American delegate, explained, "The Jews are both a race and a religious section. Their problems are different from those of other minorities." What happened in Paris, page 175. While the Ukrainians, Germans, Austrians, Slovaks, Croats, Dalmatians and Hungarians had been traded off with a rope around their necks to their enemies, the Jews had benefited from a multitude of protective measures. When the Versailles treaty makers delivered millions of Hungarians to Romania, it was only on the condition that Jews in Romania would be given preferential treatment. Manley Hudson noted, this disposition was essential to prevent a return to the abuse from which Jews in Romania had suffered. What happened in Paris, page 169-173. Previously, Jews in Romania had been excluded from public office and the professions, and restricted in dealing in land and conducting certain business in the cities. The Romanians had to promise to reverse all discrimination against Jews, despite the fact they insisted these measures were necessary to protect themselves against predatory Jewish practices. In the context of the time, the Romanian attitude was shared throughout Central Europe. The great powers' heavy-handed demands on their allies were accepted as a matter of expedience only for the purpose of partaking of the Versailles largesse. In fact, they would only aggravate ill feelings between Jews and their host countries. The promises made to the Allies would soon be forgotten, and people would be free to vent their anger after June 1919. Finally, the Allies did not even succeed in pleasing the Jews of Central Europe, who found themselves trapped like everybody else in an artificial Europe based on iniquity and lies. It would only be a matter of time before it exploded in the faces of its perpetrators. People as different as Ramsay MacDonald and Trotsky predicted the demise of the Europe of Versailles. The British Prime Minister declared, "The new war will not break out on the Rhine but in the Danube Valley, where exasperated and violent minorities vainly demand justice." Trotsky would write in Izvestia, "It is in Central Europe that the 1918 victors have started with their own hands the fire that will destroy the new world they have pretended to build."